Welcome back again. Oh, this time I'm the one that said it. You said it last time. Last week.
Okay, look, I think the last three should just be
wiped.
Nil.
We've had...
They're here. They're on the air. They're not going anywhere. However, the last three have been bare minimum on our part because it's been hell.
Yeah, we have not had a very good couple weeks. You guys know that from the past couple weeks of podcasting, just because our lives have been kind of here, there, and everywhere. Because January's been kind of nuts for us. But actually on schedule to where we should have been posting, because the last three we were going to that one week, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. We are actually back on schedule again to having interviews. And coming back, not to re-interview, but to finish his interview.
Yeah, this, by the way, first repeat customer.
Yeah, this is the first repeat customer. This is the first time an interviewee has been on again due to this time necessity. But Built C-Max is back on the line, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are y'all doing?
Not too bad. We're doing.
We're ahead of the last 3 weeks, that's for sure.
I feel that one.
Now it's been, how long has it been? 5-6 weeks since we last talked to you?
Man, if y'all got time to keep up with that, y'all must be doing better than me.
Oh,
that was an educated guess.
Yeah.
We actually truthfully have no idea.
It's got to be something like that. It's been over a month. I know that.
It's been over
I think it was before the new year, definitely.
It was before the new year that we last talked to Robert. My bad.
You fucked that.
I fucked that.
Gotta restart this.
Do you care?
No, I still don't care. I think that's one of the funny things that you've been able to see with Ron is, as he's been going and making the post about the 4 Diesel challenge, he just keeps referring to me as, you know, Mr. Built C-Max.
Oh, yeah, he does. He does. Which we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
That is coming up today.
That is coming up today.
If we can make it past some other segment, you know, that's not the shitbox.
Well, I see the secret that y'all had going this time is y'all didn't give me a topic until, like, you know, 5 minutes before the call. So, you didn't
give me time to prepare. In our defense, it's because last night I looked at Logan and I was like, you know, we should really have someone on, and we were going to have the people from the episode we lost a couple weeks ago, but they're on a time crunch, so we couldn't have them.
Right.
And I said, oh, let's just have Built C-Max back.
That's funny.
And then he forgot to text you today.
This is true. I had a fucking hellacious runaround day a little bit, and I forgot to text you, and we had that cancellation, and now we're here.
It's the story of our lives.
This is true.
Pretty much.
But last time we talked to Built C-Max, we went through his shitbox count. We actually never got to really, I mean, we got to know Built C-Max, but we did not actually get to know him.
We didn't get to the meat and potatoes of it.
Yeah, the meat and potatoes of the fella here. So, because we finally ran through every single fucking vehicle you've ever owned that sat on four wheels, if not less, let's go through kind of, you know, you talked about how you had wrenched for a career for at least an amount of time. What did that look like for you?
Well, I knew when I was a kid that I always was pretty good with my hands, and I don't know, I just always wondered about, like, mechanical stuff, like why things worked and whatnot. So I remember as a kid, I found a push lawnmower that somebody had, like, thrown away, and I did the responsible thing and pulled it out of the trash and took it back to my parents' house and pulled the entire thing apart in the garage. And I didn't know what I was doing, stole my dad's tools, started just taking bolts off. It was pretty straightforward. It's like giant Legos that you got no instructions for. You know, later that evening, my father finally came home, opened the garage door, and here's this push lawnmower that was blown into a million different pieces.
And he's like, what the fuck?
He looked at me and he goes, you are going to put all of that back together and clean this mess up. So you know what I did? I put it all back together and cleaned it up. Once I got done putting it all back together, though, I was like, oh, I wonder if it works now. And sure enough, the thing worked. Don't know how it works. Don't know why it works.
But it did.
It only worked for about 5 minutes, though, because, you know, 12-year-old Robert didn't know how to put oil back and stuff, but it worked.
That's fucking awesome.
And then after that, it was just a downhill spiral from from there. And then, you know, turn into cars. Once I graduated high school and came back to the States, I started working at a small mom-and-pop shop. And ended up, the problem with working at a small mom-and-pop shop is there's not, like, a whole lot of education and that kind of a deal. Like, you can get your ASC certifications and study on your own, but, you know, you don't really know what the technology is that they're coming out with and how things are going to go.
Right.
So, I hate Fords. Fords are probably my least favorite vehicles to mess with. And because of that, my business plan was I was going to go work for a Ford dealership because their crap is always broken.
Factual information.
So, at that point in time, went and started working at a Ford dealership, and sure enough, you know, they've got their whole school program to be able to get you through, like, basic electrical, advanced electrical, gas engine repair, diesel engine repair, automatic transmissions, NVH, all kinds of other slangy stuff, and that's where I got a majority of my education was from, the Ford dealership. But going through and doing that, the a lot of the money at that point in time wasn't really in the gas burner stuff. It was a lot of warranty work, and it was just, you know, gas cars are. They're not. It's not the end of the world if your car doesn't run or drive that day. But, you know, you get these big diesel trucks. That truck's got to be moving. If it's not moving, they're not making money with it.
Right.
So correct. My goal was to move over to use the diesel side of stuff once I got done doing all my certifications and everything. Well, if I got done doing all my certifications at the dealership, and at that point in time, they're like, all right, great, you're done with everything. You're going to be the hybrid tech. They wanted me to go through and do all the hybrid stuff that was going through the dealership. And I've been very clear about it for the entire time that I was going towards the diesel stuff. I had no interest in really staying in the gas world. I can do it. It's a core fundamental to be able to do diesel stuff, so I wasn't upset with it. But once we got done doing all the training and everything, and that was the role they were going to put me in, I really wasn't interested. So after going back and forth with them, ended up leaving the dealership and went down to Florida, did a lot of stuff down there, and then ended up coming back to Alabama, worked for another Ford dealership. And I was a diesel tech over there for 3 or 4 years. You know, did a lot of the 6-7 stuff, the 14 to 21, you know, right there when they started doing the new 10-speed transmission.
Okay. Yeah.
After seeing that 10-speed transmission, you know, I was ready to move on to something else. Plus, you know, working on these diesel trucks, you know, it's Monday through Sunday, you know, 10-hour days, so you're doing 70 hours easily. And that's just what you've got sitting there at the dealership. Because, like I said, those trucks, you know, it was one of the bigger hubs for Ford. So a lot of their 650, 750, 550 stuff, you know, Alabama Power, Irving Cable, companies like that, that's where all their crap ended up at. So it was work on top of work on top of work, and it just never slowed down.
Right. It's good money, but you never get any home time.
That's easy to get burnt out on, though.
I mean, the biggest thing, though, is a lot of it was warranty work because the companies finally started getting smarter where if we're going to abuse these trucks, you know, Ford offers a 100,000-mile and 5-year powertrain warranty.
Right.
You
so,
know.
So we're going to buy new pieces of equipment.
Bingo. You hit that 5-year mark, and you're buying yourself a new truck. I mean, it makes sense because when you're sitting there, the 6-7's bad for having CCV issues, and because nobody ever does anything with the CCV, blows out the lower oil pan. Well, in order to fix that lower oil pan leak, you got to pull the transmission out of it, which just turns into a whole nightmare.
Fuck that.
Yep, I've been through that.
Yep. So, at that point, I mean, it's all warranty, too, like I was saying, because these trucks are within that 5-year period. You're not really making a whole lot of money on it. You're making money, yes, but you're not making nowhere near what you could if it wasn't warranty work.
So exactly. I assume you were flat rate at the dealer then.
Oh, of course. I mean, I believe that's how all dealers work.
Yeah.
I worked at a dealer for a short time and I actually wasn't flat rate.
That's crazy.
I've seen more and more these days dealers getting away from flat rate. Not that there isn't still flat rate dealers out there. I know that there still is a lot.
Yeah.
But I've seen more dealerships getting away from flat rate. And you see that more on the heavy side of things versus automotive, but tit for tat regardless.
Yeah, because that was one of the biggest things that was really starting to push me away from being in a dealership was doing all the flat rate stuff, because flat rate is a give and take system. I mean, if you're doing 110% warranty work the entire time, flat rate, you're going to do nothing but get screwed over. And when you got companies that are willing to pull trucks all the way from South Florida up to us so that our service advisor can say, yes, we'll fix that under warranty, you're getting the short end of the stick at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. If they feed you nothing but warranty work, you're going to get screwed on flat rate. That's just how it is.
That's a solid shaft job, yeah.
Yep, but all in all, it wasn't a bad gig, but learned a lot of stuff for the Ford side of things. Did that for a while. Once we ended up leaving there, I went and I worked for AT&T as a shop foreman. It was pretty easy job. Worked on a lot of the 450s. They all have gas burner stuff, so a lot of 6.8, 6.2. Had a few 6.2s, not a whole lot. A lot of Kodiaks. Man, did they love their Kodiaks.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And most of that was just PM stuff, so, simple wheels, tires, brakes, oil changes, transmission filters, fuel filters, all your basic stuff. It was really, really easy. I ended up getting booted from that job for making the TikTok of me hammering the camshaft into my Duramax in their parking lot because that's where my tools were. Really interesting.
What? They booted you over that?
That was the reasoning for it. So, it was the dumbest thing ever. It was a Sunday afternoon. I needed this Duramax to be able to go to Cletus and Cars Indy, I think it was. It might have been Bristol. I don't remember. Anywho, I needed a Duramax into the truck, and I didn't have one at that point in time, and I had one that had a sheared pin. And I had another one that had smoked bottom end, so I was like, well, I'll just take the cam out of the one that smoked the bottom end, and I'll throw that one in the one that's got the sheared pin, and we'll throw another piston in it for the one that hit the valve, put a set of different cylinder heads on it. We'll be good to go. And I was like, oh, well, all the stuff that I need to be able to swap out of a cam is over there at the shop, because, we've got the shop in Tuscaloosa, but my tools were in Birmingham, all the heavy-duty tools that you need to do something like a cam.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Gonna go over there. I'm gonna get the tools that I need for that. I'm just gonna leave the motor in the back of the truck. That way I can swap the motor out or swap the cam from one motor to the other motor, get it all buttoned back together, put my tools back, and be done for the day. That way I didn't have to carry my tools all the way home, put them in the shop, lose them in the shop, and then not have them when I needed them again.
Right. Yeah, so, I get that.
Made perfect sense in my head. So I was like, all right. And went to slide. I was using an LLY block, and I was using the LB7 cam. For whatever reason, they didn't fit together quite perfectly, and I've got an event to make. I don't care at this point in time. Took the hammer and just sent her home, and at that point, I was like, oh, that'd probably make a really good TikTok, because, you're not supposed to do this kind of stuff.
Right.
So sure enough, filmed it, put it up on TikTok, came in that Monday, worked for the entire day. About 2 p.m., I got a phone call. Hey, we need you to come over to HR. Okay, that's interesting. Go over to HR, and they're like, why is there a TikTok of you in our parking lot? At that point in time, I think it had 200 or 300,000 views on it. So they're like, why are you in our parking lot? I was like, my tools are here. You don't pay for my tools to be here. I pay for my tools to be here. So if I need to be able to have those tools to work on my motor, I'm going to come and use my tools. I'm not using y'all's shop. I'm in the parking lot,
Yeah. And you're not on company time.
Not on company time, none of that stuff. And the HR lady, well, that's just unacceptable, and, had a whole hissy fit about it, and I was like, well, y'all can terminate me, but if you do that, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So they went through and they did, this whole investigation thing about why I was there to verify the times and everything else, and it took them, 3 or 4 weeks, basically a month to go through and get everything, and they're like, yep, we're just going to terminate you, which... didn't really want to go back if you're going to get pissed off at me for making a TikTok on my time with my tools, but that's fine.
That's just,
short story long.
Yeah, that's dumb.
I think they wanted to do a reset of that entire shop or whatever it was, because everybody that used to be in the Birmingham AT&T maintenance area is gone. None of them made it past another 3 or 4 months after I left. So,
jeez,
what the reason behind that, I don't know, but... left out of there, ended up moving out to Tuscaloosa, and then started working in a Dodge dealership for a little while. Worked there for about 4 or 5 months, same thing as any dealership, lots of warranty work on top of lots of warranty work on top of lots of warranty work. Biggest thing is their Cummins. They made the fantastic decision to put a CP4 into it.
Yep.
Well, they've got a recall to put the CP3 in it. And it just, that's all we did was just putting CP4s to CP3s. And the best part would be whenever they, you know, let go, the CP4 would let go and just trash the whole motor.
Yep.
But got tired of doing that day in and day out. Lots of transmissions as well. 68s are still in production and they still break just as often. We'll say that y'all, Cummins folks now have a saving grace with that ASIN transmission. That ASIN is a beast of a transmission compared to the 68s.
I've been hearing a lot of good things about it. I
don't care for the way they shift.
You don't care for the way they shift?
I don't.
How do they shift?
Like an Allison, but shitty. Oh. Okay. Ones I've driven have.
So like a 5R110 then?
Eh.
Well, what's crazy is the ASIN is basically an Allison or a 456. I mean, it's a clutch-on-clutch setup.
Yeah.
I feel that in between the gears is too long.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Well, I don't feel that with my torque shift, so I don't know. My torque shift just grabs gears and it's fine. It doesn't care, but that's just my opinion.
I need my Allison to go through a relearn or something because it takes like a solid 6 to 7 business days before it decides to grab the next gear.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Once she grabs it, she's locked in, ready to go, but she'll unlock one gear and then it takes her a good second, 2 seconds before it decides to find the next one.
Yeah, I've only driven a couple trucks with the ASIN. I mean, I didn't hate them, but I really didn't love them.
Well,
and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they've got to release one clutch before they can apply the next clutch. So without TCM tuning and like shortening the life expectancy of it, you're not going to get those really tight shifts. It's a heavy duty transmission.
Yeah, and
I know, and I get that.
And I think, and that's where Robert's coming from right now. I think that might be why, is because you're so used to like a 47, 48, 67, 68 shift in your Dodge.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, it just bangs them. That might be why. I don't know. That's just an idea.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's just, a lot of it has to do with the way that it works because it's intended for a truck application. So there's a little extra time in there delayed for at least one clutch before applying the next clutch to help with wear. Because if you're applying two clutches at the same time, like you do in your 47, 48.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're going to get that wear.
Yeah, you get that wear, and that's why we end up having the problems that we do. But
even Allisons that do the same thing, though. I've driven hundreds of Allison trucks, and I just like the way an Allison shifts versus an ASIN.
Versus an ASIN.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel... I haven't driven... I've heard good things about the ASIN. I haven't driven one yet. Does it feel slushy? Is that what you're...
No, it's not a slushy thing.
Okay. I'm just asking. To ask. Okay, I'm just asking. Anyways, regardless.
I think a lot of it just has to do with that delay between gears.
Do what?
I think a lot of it just has to do with that delay between gears.
No, that's exactly what it is. That's what I'm saying.
And that's why I'm asking if it feels slushy.
Most notably to me was the one-two shift.
Does it have like a...
On the 1-2 shift, though, it defuels, so, like, that's going to cut fuel to the motor before it'll let it grab second gear, so
that's probably why.
Oh.
See, I didn't know that little tidbit, but that makes sense.
Well, I didn't even think about that happening either.
Yeah, whenever it goes to unapply one clutch, it'll do a command for the ECM to cut fuel to the motor.
Oh, well, the Duramaxes do the same thing.
Yeah, it would have to. That's the exact same thing.
So, anyway, I'm stupid.
Anyway, Dakota's stupid, and you worked at a Dodge dealership.
Worked at a Dodge dealership. Ended up leaving out of there, and then kind of just been doing oddball stuff, you know, as I can. Been unemployed now for, like, probably a little over a year.
Okay.
Not that I'm not looking. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, you go out and you put out the job applications and everything else, and... You know, I am not going to go and take cylinder heads off of C-15s for $15 an hour. It's not worth my time to do that. But the people that are actually paying just never get back to me, and I don't know if that's because there's such a gap in my resume or what the deal is, but it's been an interesting deal to dealing with the way the jobs are in this world.
Well, that fucking sucks.
It does.
So, but it's all good. We've made it this far, and we're going to keep making it. And, you know, the nice part of all of it is it gives me the ability to make a lot of the content for TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, whatever the deal is. Doesn't exactly allow me the funding that I need, but
no, it doesn't. But I don't know. At least you can survive and continue, you know, doing this in general.
Yep. And that's what the plan's always been, is just to be able to do what I love. So, with or without a job.
Well, yeah. So speaking of TikTok and the social media stuff and yada, 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 how did you fall into this?
Oof, that is an absolutely loaded question because...
Shit, okay.
I would always say that you would catch me on an episode of Cops before you found me on TikTok. I thought TikTok was the stupidest thing that there possibly was, and wasn't really big on social media. I had a personal Instagram account that I posted just, you know, the crap that I was doing.
Yeah.
And people could follow it. It was a private deal. It was what it was. And then I had I've got my Facebook account, which that still is the same. But one of my buddies came over to the farm when I was building the 67, and he went, he didn't know nothing about it. I just do my own thing. A lot of the stuff that I do isn't for social media. It isn't for, there's no real reason behind it other than I've got an idea, I want to try it, or I think this would be really cool and I'm going to do that.
Right.
Whether it works or not is a completely different story, but that's just how I've always done things. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take, I've seen Fernando's truck, and his truck was, I believe it was a 72 C10 on a LV7 Duramax chassis. It was orange.
I'm kind of remembering this.
It was a while ago, and I believe it's been through a couple of owners since him. But I remember seeing it somewhere. I saw a video of it, and I was like, that is just the coolest thing ever. I want one of those. But I'm not going to take the time. You can't just go out and buy one. You can't just go to the dealership and be like, yes, I want a 67 to 72 C10 with an LB7 in it, please. And they'll just, you know, ship you one tomorrow.
Right.
So it was always one of those things of, I'll build one whenever I get the chance, or if I ever get the opportunity to buy one, I'll buy one. And that probably went on for about 2 to 3 years. Never really had the opportunity to do anything with it. Well, I started flipping diesel trucks, so 7.3s, 6 liters, LB7s, LOIs, LBZs, whatever the deal was. You know, something that I knew I could make a couple dollars off of. I ended up going out and I picked up a 03 LV7 single cab long bed. It used to be used for a contracting company, and they ended up moving to a crew cab because they needed a bigger cab space. Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the motor that was in it, they had some kind of issue going on with it where it kept adding coolant to the oil, and they were done messing with it. So I bought this truck. The dude was asking $1,500 for it. I ended up buying it for, I believe, $600, drove it onto the trailer, and took it home, put it in the corner of the farm, and I was like, whenever I get a chance, probably just needs a water pump. I'll pull the water pump off, put a water pump on it, be done with it. Didn't think it really needed head gaskets because there was no, you know, pressure coming out of the cooling system. And, I mean, the thing ran pretty good. Just was milkshaking. So put that to the side, and I had been on and off looking for a 67 to 72 C10 to do the Duramax swap with, but C10s have always been ridiculously expensive. You find these trucks that are out there in these junkyards that people are wanting $2,500, $4,500 for, but it's not worth that. Like, I get it. Somebody can do something with it, but it's not worth all the time and labor and everything else to pour into it.
Right.
I mean, if you have to have a specific truck, I get it, but, and I mean, that's kind of the position that I was at, is I had to have a GMC. I did not want a C10, mostly because of the 4 headlights. I knew whenever I did the swap that I was going to use the donor truck's wiring for it, so having 4 headlights made the wiring work up just like it would on a factory cat eye, and I'd been looking around. There had been, you know, a couple trucks here and there. And I'd gone out and looked at them, and everybody was firm at, like, 25 to 4 grand for the trucks. And I was just like, it's not worth it. So, anywho, fast forward, about 6 months, and got a phone call from the junkyard. And the junkyard was like, hey, you know, nobody's buying these trucks. Big surprise. And we're going to crush them. You know, if you want, you know, one, two, all of them, we'll sell them to you at whatever the weight of scrap is. So I think it was like 9 or 10 cents a pound at that point in time. And I was like, that's a deal I can get behind. Got no problem with that.
Right.
So the problem is they were going to crush them the next day, and they didn't call me till like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. So 2 o'clock, I was like, all right, well, got up, left work, went and hooked the trailer up to the truck. Went out to the scrapyard, and we were only able to get one of the trucks before, you know, they closed. And then, of course, the next day, they crushed all of them. But one is all I really needed. So, at right, that point right. in time, I had the truck sitting there. And then I was like, all right, well, now that I've got that, I need to start looking for a donor to be able to do a Duramax swap. And then, as I sat there and thought about it, I was like, well, I've got this LB7. I was just going to flip. I'm $600, $700 into this thing. You know, between the cost of the truck and doing a water pump on a Duramax, I'll be, you know, less than, you know, $1,500, $2,000 into it by the time you sell and scrap all the other stuff that you don't need. So, went through, and at that point, I just started building it, and then now we can circle back to where I was in the middle of building it. My buddy comes and sees this thing and goes, you need to make an Instagram account for this. You need to make a TikTok account for this. The people will love this thing. Uh-huh. And I was like, dude, I am nobody in the middle of Alabama. Like, nobody cares what I'm doing. Why would I do that? And he was like, I'm telling you, people are going to love it. And he made a post somewhere. I don't remember where, but it got like 10,000 likes or something stupid. And it was just this truck in the middle of a field. I was like, you know what? If 10,000 people are willing to like that photo, maybe I should be doing something.
Right.
So I started an Instagram for it that kind of, well, I started the Instagram on my way to Cletus and Cars, but I had all the photos and stuff from when I started building it. So I just kind of trickled those photos into that account and just started posting stuff to social media. Fast forward a little bit longer, because like I said, you'd never catch me on TikTok. You'd find me somewhere else before that. We were at the shop, and I had a TikTok account to be able to watch TikToks, because my buddy would always send me TikToks. And it was very frustrating for him to send them to me in Snapchat and then try to open them in a web browser and everything else.
Yeah, that's annoying. Yeah, I think it's how a lot of people ended up on TikTok, to be honest. I think you're right, yeah. too.
So, at that point, I already had an account, and I was like, well, I'm just going to take some of the reels that I've got on Instagram, and I'm just going to post them over to TikTok and see what happens. And the first reel that I put, or the first TikTok I posted got, like, maybe 100 views. Second TikTok I posted got maybe 200 views. Third TikTok I posted using a torque wrench got over 1 million views on it, and I was like, maybe there's something to this.
Fuck yeah.
And then, after that, I made it quickly to 10,000 followers, and at 10,000 followers back in the day, you could become part of the creator fund. So TikTok yep. would yep. pay you for making, you know, TikToks. And I was like, well, if TikTok is going to pay me to make content, I'll use their platform. That just makes sense. So after that point, you know, I kept doing Instagram because I was already committed to that platform, but, you know, really started doing a lot more stuff on TikTok because it was making a couple dollars here and a couple dollars there, and I'd use that to be able to help pay for, like, the entries into Cletus and Cars or the Fitzgerald Truck Show or, you know, whatever event we were going to.
Yeah,
that way it wasn't really money out of my pocket, and it turned it back to the community, the guys that are actually watching the content that I was giving them.
Yeah, that was back in the good old days of TikTok, and those that aren't, like, haven't been a creator or whatever on TikTok don't know about that, really, but, like, that was, like, the good old days.
That's when TikTok was a lot more wild, like the Wild West.
But yeah, TikTok used to be the fucking Wild West at one time. It was.
There was no telling what you were going to see as you were going through your For You page.
Oh, God, that was so much fun back in those days. But yeah.
So, got monetized on TikTok and then been doing that since then. I mean, the account has steadily grown. It's been, you hit 10,000 followers, and my thing has always been like, I don't really care that much about the followers. sorry for all of y'all that follow me and are like, oh, he doesn't care about me, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I've got 100,000 followers or if I've got one follower. I'm going to keep doing whatever it is that I do, and if you want to watch the content, great, it's there for you. If you don't want to watch it, great, I don't care.
I've been the same way, don't worry.
And I hate it for a lot of some of these guys that message me about this stuff, because they're like, hey, you know, we see that you're doing good on social media, you know, I want to be that guy. You know, how do I become good on social media? And the reality to it is, you just don't care. If you don't care, you'll do pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Once you start caring, it makes it look like you're putting in too much effort and you're trying to figure out everything to make it work. And that works for a couple of guys. You know, they do it, they'll hit a couple million view videos and then it comes and goes.
Yep.
And I think that's what really gets them, is they'll get that million view video and then they'll expect to post, you know, 5, 6, 7 more videos and be able to hit a million views again. And it just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. And that's just the name of the game.
So, at the end of the day, you know, if you want to be on social media, doing social media stuff, like, post whatever you're into. You know, if you want to build the baddest Honda, post that. People follow the guys that have got the drive for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing for, you know, Instagram or YouTube. And I know that's also one of the other things is, I had Instagram because Instagram made sense to me. I would be able to work on the truck, take a simple photo of whatever the deal was, post it on Instagram, you know, add in a caption, do a couple hashtags, whatever the deal was, hit post, you're 2 minutes into making your post for the day, worked out great. To make a TikTok, you got to actually have, you know, like a video, so you got to be able to edit, you got to be able to have a vision for how that TikTok is going to go or whatever the video is.
It's far more time-consuming.
Way more time consuming. But the thing for me was I wanted to be able to start moving towards YouTube. So Instagram at the time was primarily focused on photos. We really didn't do a whole lot with reels. I think we'd gotten the videos or whatever it was where you could upload like a 1 minute to 3 minute long video.
Yep.
But there really wasn't reels at that point in time. So I was like, the Instagram was doing pretty good. We had over 10,000 followers. And I was like, well, if we got 10,000 followers, maybe there's enough to be able to do a YouTube. The problem, though, is I knew that I did not have the skills or the ability to film an entire YouTube episode, edit an entire YouTube video, and publish it that people would actually want to sit there and watch. Because that's one of my biggest things of where I'm not just going to put content out there. I want it to be quality content that people are going to be able to walk away with knowing something or being able to see how it's done. I don't want them to be able to open up my YouTube channel and me being filming on like a Nokia. Like, I want good quality for the people that are going to be there.
Yeah, you don't want it to be junk shit. You want it to actually be worth something.
Exactly. Well, you got to, if you're going to put that much effort into it, I mean, you got to film everything. Go ahead and add in a little couple extra steps and make it worth the time.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of people see that part. So I knew, though, that I didn't have the skills or the ability to do any of that. And I was like, well, if I've got to, you know, do a 7 to 15 minute long YouTube episode, I don't have the ability to edit or do anything for that. TikTok was an easy stepping stone for that. Now you can make a 5 to 1 minute long video. You got to do your filming for it. You got to do your editing for it. And it taught me a lot of how to go through and do the editing and filming to be able to make content. Whereas it wasn't like the Instagram of just posting a photo here and there and being done with it. You know, you actually had to have a storyline that people were going to follow. And, you know, it made sense in my head. So we started doing the TikTok with that stuff. And, you know, sadly, I never really moved a lot of my stuff over to YouTube because TikTok has got you set up in the vertical platform, whereas YouTube really has got you set up on the horizontal platform. And at the end of the day, TikTok pays me more money than what YouTube does, but a lot of my content gets geared for TikTok.
Right. Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
So, but the flip side of that, though, is, you know, if TikTok or Instagram or whatever the deal was to up and leave today, you know, I'd be able to easily move to whatever platform was next. You know, let's see, this is what, Thursday? I think today's Thursday. On Saturday of this past weekend, my TikTok account, or not TikTok account, my Instagram account got banned. Don't know what the deal was other than it violated their community guidelines or whatever it was, and it was claimed that I was impersonating a professional, or not a professional, famous person.
Like a celebrity.
Yeah, celebrity. Your account is impersonating a celebrity, and I was like, what in the world? This is literally a truck, but okay. So, they took the entire account down, and they were like, nope, can't have anything to do with it, and I'd gone back and forth, sent them a couple of emails, and been like, look, I don't know what y'all's deal is. It is an account that is geared around a truck. Can I get my account back? If not, that's fine, whatever, I don't really care, but it was as simple as woke up one day, looked at it, went, oh, your account's banned, cool. You know, if you don't believe this, send us an email here at this address, and, you know, we'll look into it, we'll review it. So I sent them an email with it, and that was the end of it. And Saturday didn't have Instagram, Sunday didn't have Instagram, Monday didn't have Instagram. It wasn't until yesterday that they finally went back and they're like, yeah, your account's really just for a truck, not a celebrity, carry on. And at the end of the day, it didn't really matter to me because Instagram doesn't monetize me on anything. Yeah, it's cool to have a big account that's got, you know, over 50,000 followers, but at the end of the day, that doesn't mean anything because there's no, it's only there for content production. So whether I make it on an account that's got 50,000 followers or 50, it's the same thing at that point in time.
Right. Yeah, me getting banned on TikTok a while ago was fucking awful.
That whole round of bans. I got banned.
Yeah, even Dakota got banned, and he didn't have hardly a following at the time. That was ridiculous.
I might have had 2,000 at the time.
Yeah.
And I got like caught that. In that same, like, whole group of people that got banned that day.
Yeah, that was bad.
See, I never got part of that. I remember I would ride the line on the early TikTok days because doing burnouts and doing, drifting a truck, being reckless with the truck went against their community guidelines.
Yeah.
So if you post a video of you sliding a truck, it would get flagged, and you had a 50-50 shot of it being, you know, your discretion or getting a strike against your account for acts of... I forgot what the name of it was. But essentially, you get it like strikes, and you got 3 strikes, and then your account gets banned. Anywho,
yeah.
I would always ride that line with 1 or 2 strikes, just waiting on the third one, because it's all we did with the truck was burnouts.
Yeah, so it makes sense that that's all the videos that get posted about it, is that's what, you know, that's its purpose.
So, I definitely learned a lot of little tricks and hacks and other ways to be able to get around getting flagged for stuff, but It was definitely very interesting, and now they seem to have let up a lot on it, but, because they'll, if I post a video of a burnout, it won't go on a For You page, but if you're following me, you'll see it.
Right, exactly.
Well, when I got banned, I didn't even have anything, I didn't have, like, any burnouts or anything crazy on my...
No, and actually, when I got banned on TikTok, my ban actually hit before the big ban...
Yeah, yours was. Yours was a little prior to it.
And I was here at the shop, and I posted a 2-part video explaining how I go about removing kingpins from big trucks. I just went through, like, and that was when you could only do 3 minutes. So I did 2 3-minute videos explaining, or about 3 minutes, explaining how I went through this process and how I do it. And I went to bed that night. And I woke up the next morning, and my TikTok account wasn't there.
Guys?
Yeah?
He goes, where's the account at?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like...
Well, mine too, because remember, you just got banned. My whole device got banned.
Yeah, you got... So
I had to get another fucking phone.
Yeah, so Dakota got IP banned. I did not get IP banned. I just got the account itself banned.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people, like Chloe Rothensberger, Miss Flatbed Red, and there's a whole list of people, they all got an IP ban, which means that they had to go through, if they were going to continue posting on TikTok, they had to go through and get a whole new phone and SIM card.
That's good.
That's fucking...
He says that's good.
They got slammed. That sucked. Actually, Chloe Rothenberger for a while had 2 phones, and she would use one for content and the other just for personal stuff, which worked out nice for her. I should do that, but regardless.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's been I've thought about doing, like, the two phones or trying to really start dividing it, but at the end of the day, like I said, it's, the money's great, but at the end of the day, I don't do it for the money. I don't care about the
no, absolutely.
For it. So if the account gets banned, the account gets banned. You know, I'll be a little bit bummed if my TikTok account gets banned. But if the Instagram account gets banned,
whatever.
It is what it is, yeah. You know? So, which kind of sucks, though, because I don't know if you ever made it into the Instagram bonus program, but that stuff for the longest time was paying out way better than what YouTube or TikTok or anybody else was paying for content.
Yeah, I never quite made it into that when that was super big. I knew about it, and I was pushing for it, but I never quite made it into that whole roundabout.
Yeah, because that program was by invite only, so I remember...
Yeah, Instagram had to tell you that they wanted you in this program.
Bingo. And I had heard about it because I was like, well, I'm monetized on TikTok, so how do I get monetized on Instagram? If I'm going to put this content out there, I'd like to get paid for it. And they're like, oh, it's by invite only. I was like, ah, so there's probably some pretty stringent standards for it. Well, I just kept doing my thing, posting my content as I did, and I was coming back from UCC, and I got an invite to it. You know, they sent you a whole message and everything else. They're like, hey, you know, we like the content you're doing, everything else. Would you be interested in being part of the bonus program? And a lot of that was to be able to grab creators to create a lot more on Instagram instead of using TikTok or the YouTube Reels, to be able to try to retain that audience
right
to their
correct.
Platform. So... Anywho, at that point in time, it was only for Instagram Reels. It wasn't for your standard post or anything else. But that stuff would pay because, like, I remember this is just the way that it was, but it would be easy to do $800 to $1,200 a month on the Instagram bonus program. And I think my account only had 20,000 followers, maybe.
Yeah. Wow.
But that program was paying out. And then I remember, it's funny, when I was coming back from UCC, I got invited to the program. And then when I was driving back from Cletus and Cars Indy, so both from being at the Indianapolis Speedway, driving back, I got the notification that, you know, this will be the last month of doing the bonus programs. They terminated that program.
Yep.
And I was, like, really annoyed by it because I was like, man, that's a nice bit of income that I'm able to use to keep making this content. But on the flip side, you know, I only had, when I first started out in that program, 20,000 followers, and by the end of it, we were up there at 60,000 to 70,000 followers, so it was just generating more and more income off of it, and it was helping the account grow.
Right. Yeah.
So, once it ended, there really wasn't a whole lot of a reason to post on that platform, and I still post there occasionally. We still do the standard stuff just because some people use Instagram. It's a lot easier to use Instagram stories than it is to use TikTok stories or any other platform.
Oh, yeah, dude. I am legitimately daily, like, just because it's so easy to use and it shows that I'm, like, still present and around and stuff like that. Like, Instagram stories, I'm, like, literally constantly posting on that shit. Like, constantly.
Well, I think the other thing, too, though, is it also helps, like, if you want to start working with different companies. I mean, doing the 67, I do a lot of Duramax stuff, I do a lot of truck trip stuff. Having an account that has 10,000 followers, 50,000 followers, 100,000 followers is far more appealing to companies that might want to work with you on certain products than if you only had, you know, 200 followers.
Right, exactly.
So, I keep that account moving kind of for that reasoning, but, I mean, I know I'm also kind of picky about my people, whereas if, you know, I'm trying to do something like build the 67, I remember I reached out to a lot of different companies to be like, you know, hey, here's what I'm doing. I'm putting a 67C10 on top of a Duramax chassis. Would y'all be interested in working with me? And everybody would always message back, you know, do you have a following? Do you have anything? You know, have you done anything in the past? What's your history? And I understand that. And it would always come back to the same thing of, we're not really interested in doing anything with you, but if you'd like to buy our products, here you go. And not asking for the products for free, you know, I'm not looking for a full sponsorship out of anything. But it never hurts to reach out to people. And whenever you've got somebody that's going to go through and build something like the 67 where you got over 200,000 followers between all the different platforms, it pans out in the long run. So a lot of the companies that I reached to out or reached out to at the very beginning, you know, if you're not interested in jumping on board at the very beginning, I want nothing to do with you. And there were a couple of companies that jumped on and 500 followers, 1,000 followers, and those companies have been absolutely nothing but amazing. And then, you know, as things have grown, more and more companies have jumped on, but it's always been interesting.
And I always like the companies that'll help support the smaller dudes, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get it, too, because, like I said, I'm not, it's not so much of a, helping the smaller dude, but it's like, if you've got something you're going to build, you know, and you're asking for to work with somebody, and they just automatically go no, you know, if they even give you the time of day to begin with.
Right.
And, you know, you've got that 1,000 followers, but now that you've got over 100,000 followers, they're reaching out to you, and, hey, we're doing this product, you know, we want you to test it.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I've got the following, you want to talk to me? Like, there's
no, and that's I'm what I'm saying. That's that. I hate the snobby ones that won't even look in your direction, but I just... I like the guys that won't overlook the little guys. And we'll be there since day one.
Or the other thing, too, is I know, like, if people talk to me, I'll be like, hey, look, you know, such and such is doing this. Would you be interested in working with them? And at the end of the day, like, from a company's perspective, you know, if you got somebody that doesn't have that big of a following, even if you give them, you know, $5 off, $20 off of whatever the deal is, that's going to be far more inclined to help them, you know, you're helping them save $20. They can go get themselves lunch or whatever the deal is now.
Yep. Yeah.
And they're going to be able to have your product and they're going to speak highly of it. And if you're just, you know, you don't have a social media following, you don't have anything else, we're not interested in what you're doing. You know, that's, I don't know. So everybody gets their own thing. It's how business works.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it all still goes around at the end of the day. So fucking whatever.
Yeah. So it's been good though. I can't say for all of the companies that I've had the opportunity to work with, they've all been absolutely amazing. And you know, they've been, it's interesting. I'll say a lot of the companies that I reach out to is companies that I've bought their products in the past for all the other Duramaxes that I've done. You know, we've got over 40 vehicles that I've been through. I've bought a lot of parts from a lot of different companies. In doing that, I know the companies that I like. I know the companies that I don't like. When I started building the 67 after going through all those different vehicles, it was like, hey, you know, I really like this product. I really like that product, whatever the deal is. Some of them just went ahead and bought it because it was a product that I knew that I needed to have, whether it was for their customer service or just the quality of the part or whatever the deal was. But then there were definitely a couple other companies that I was using before that were not as a... friendly as I would like for them to be, and we've quit using a lot of their products.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. I really do understand that. Yeah.
I could think the world of a product, but if, even if I'm not anybody, and if their guys treat me like shit at a show or something, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
I'm dropping it.
Yeah, and I can totally understand that and get it.
Well, see, my thing, too, though, is not so much... I don't really care how you act at a show. I get it. You know, we all have good days, we all have bad days.
Yeah.
I completely understand that. But when you send me a product and you've made a mistake on the product and you're not willing to correct the mistake, you want me to pay to correct the mistake that y'all made from the beginning? That's another good
one. Yeah.
I'm not interested in anything that you've got to offer, and I have gone out of my way to custom make billet parts just so I didn't have to use that company.
He says, fuck,
I don't care.
You.
I don't care if your product is $5 for this little piece of tube or whatever the deal is. I will go out and spend $30,000 on a CNC mill just to be able to cut out my own piece. It doesn't matter.
That's
no, I get it. And I wholeheartedly agree with you.
That's fucking hilarious.
But no, social media stuff is fun. A lot of the companies we work with, good stuff out there. So, what else we got?
Well, I know what we should talk about.
What?
I think we should talk about the Poor Diesel Challenge.
Ooh, yeah, let's lead into that a little bit. So, since we talked to you last, I think actually it was like a week or two, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was very shortly after this whole shenanigan arose.
You just, like, dropped this fucking... Explain. Explain, clown.
All right, so Poor Diesel Challenge is something that has evolved way faster than I thought it would, but it's working out pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going through and building a budget Duramax. People had asked me, you know, how can I build a Duramax and save a couple dollars here, save a couple dollars there? What parts can I use? What platform would you choose? And it's something I constantly get asked is like, how would you build a Duramax? You know, where can you save money? Where should you spend money? And I was like, well, the motor in the 67 is blown up. I'm going to have to build a Duramax. So if I'm going to have to build a Duramax, I would like to see enough people have been commenting after blowing up that Duramax that you should have put a Cummins in it. You should have put a 12 valve in it or whatever the useless motor is that they prefer.
Yeah, 12 valve guys annoy the shit out of me.
Yeah, I know.
So the common rail guys aren't getting any better. They make the power to back it now.
Start running, boy.
They don't have to use three cans of ether to fire up their old 12 valve. They cut the grip heater off of it, and it's at 32 degrees of timing.
Yeah, because the ECM can pull it back at startup.
There we go.
Anyways.
But I was like, all right, you know, if I'm going to go through and do a budget Duramax, I would like to see pound for pound, you know, somebody that could do a budget Cummins. You know, does the Duramax come out on top for the budget? You know, is it something that, you know, if you're looking to do a Power Stroke, a Cummins, a Duramax, whatever the platform is, which one's the best dollar per dollar?
Yeah.
And the problem that I had with that is, you know, I'm a pretty scrappy guy. I've got no problem building my own motor, building my own transmission, buying used parts. I know relatively what I'm looking for and how it all is supposed to jive together. That being said, if I was going to do this, like, you know, budget build, so to speak, the problem is you've got to find somebody that knows the platform. You know, I don't know a whole lot about Cummins other than it's a mechanical pump. If you get into later stuff, it's common rail. And I don't mess a whole lot with those motors because it's not the platform that I'm into. I've had a third gen, you know, I've had a 5.9 common rail, and it's a great truck and everything, but dollar per dollar, Cummins stuff is just so much more expensive in my arena, in my experience. You know, I know kind of what parts you can look for here and there, but I don't know a whole lot about the platform. So to do a budget build on a Cummins wouldn't really be just for the audience for me to do, because I wouldn't be able to give them the real scrappiness of building that platform. I just don't know it. I don't know the parts I'd be looking for or anything else. Right. So at that point, I knew that I would have to find somebody that knows the scrappiness, that would be able to look through Facebook Marketplace to go find themselves a, you know, 24 valve and then find himself a P7100 or whatever pump he needs at 3 a.m. in the, yeah, 3 in the morning. And I had to find somebody that had that scrappiness to him. Well, we've all met Ron.
Oh, yeah.
As I was sitting there thinking about it, I was like, oh, dude, Ron would be the perfect person. I could see him doing the platform justice. That is a guy that I know if you were to put him into a competition, because, you know, we're all guys, we're all going to be like, nope, we've got the best, and we're going to live up to our pride to the best of our abilities.
Right.
And we're going to live and die by the platform we've got. Ron is a Cummins guy through and through. Not a transmission guy, but that's okay.
Sorry, that made me laugh, but continue.
Yeah, so at that point, I was like, all right, you know, I've got no problem doing the Duramax. I love the platform. I know the platform. I know how to do everything. Ron knows the Cummins platform. He knows, you know, he's got the ability to work on it himself and be able to do everything that an audience can follow, and it makes sense, and he'll do the platform justice. I don't have to worry about, you know, him sandbagging or doing something else. He's got, you know, the budget that we already went through in Range Dog, which we'll talk about that in a minute, but I knew he would do the platform justice.
Right,
and I didn't
want
anybody off of social media to join into this and be like, okay, well, you know, we're going to do a budget build, and then they're, you know, either A, cheating, you know, buying whatever parts they want to buy, or B, they just really don't know the platform that well, and they don't have the ability to convey that information to the audience.
Yeah, and then the whole thing flies off the handle, and the purpose is gone anyways.
Yeah. Bingo, because, like, the whole point behind this, you know, Poor Diesel Challenge was, like I said, it was Cummins swap. You should have done a Cummins swap. And I was like, you know what? If the Cummins swap is so good, I need to find somebody that can build a Cummins in the same arena that I'm in. Boom. Right. Ron was an easy answer. And I knew Ron kind of had some stuff going on, but I didn't know what all he planned for this season. And I figured it was early enough into it that I could just go ahead and throw him out there. And he'd either take the opportunity or he wouldn't, and I'd have to find somebody else to do a Cummins. But that worked out pretty well. Power strokes were a little bit different because I don't know a whole lot of people that brag on the power stroke platform.
True. Yeah. Especially in an arena like what you're working in, where you have to stay scrappy.
Well, that's the thing too, is like, so for a power stroke, your 7.3 and your 6 liters a Huey injection system. So you've got to do not just a fuel system, like, you know, your common rail, but you've also got to do an oiling system too.
Correct.
Yep, so you've got to build two different systems to it. The 7.3 just doesn't really have the, it's a reliable motor. Your 7.3 can show up and it'll make 500 foot pounds of torque all day long and stay running smooth. You're not going to be beating any of these guys that are, you know, chasing a performance application. It's just not built for that platform.
No.
6 liters, we all know the story behind the 6 liter. They're a basket case. The 6.4, I was worried that whoever was going to do this is just going to load that 300 horse tune onto a 6.4, and whenever it blows, it blows.
That's fair.
I mean, like, if you're trying to do a cheap truck challenge, I mean, do that. The problem is it's basically just a disposable platform at that point in time. You know, you buy the 6.4 for, you know, $8,000, whatever the dude is asking for running and driving 6.4 these days. And then you just throw the spicy tune on it and, well, it shatters a piston or whatever it decides to do. And then the 6.7, the 6.7 Power Stroke is an absolutely amazing motor. It's got the torque shift 6. It's a great transmission. It's a great platform. They're not cheap, though. You know, you're not going to be able to go and buy one of those trucks for pennies on the dollars like you can a Duramax or a Cummins.
Correct.
So trying to find a individual that would be able to do that platform justice was extremely hard. And I think another thing, too, that we didn't touch on is a 6 liter Power Stroke won Diesel Power Challenge back-to-back.
It did. That happened.
So, like, I know that the Power Stroke has the ability to absolutely dominate anything. The problem is finding individual that is willing to go through all the headache and be able to make something competitive and noteworthy. So after doing a lot of thinking about it and talking to a couple different people, Tyler Hewitt, you know, the guy that put a 6 liter into a Mustang, put a 6 liter in an old Dodge Ranch something or another, D250, I think.
Yep, I know exactly who this is.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you know, after seeing the stuff that he had done with the Mustang and being able to talk to him at Cletus and Cars, I was confident enough that he would be able to do the Power Stroke platform justice, just like Ron would do the Cummins platform and like I would do the Duramax platform. And having those two people now figure it out, I was like, all right, you know, somehow I need to just manage to convince them to be a part of this challenge or whatever it's going to be able to do this budget build. And I was like, well, the easiest way to do this is to call them out on social media. And worst case, they decline. Best case, we end up doing it. Now all three of us are making content for the people that want this platform. So whenever somebody gets into my comment sections and goes, you should have put a Cummins in it, I just send them over to Ron. If you want a Power Stroke, go talk to Tyler. Like, if you want a Duramax, great, you're here, we've got the platform. And then if you believe that, you know, that platform, that Cummins is the superior platform, that Power Stroke is a superior platform, or whatever the deal is, you'll be able to see it happen. So I made the video, making the post about it, sent Ron and Tyler a message. We all started talking together, ended up doing a group call. And we went over, you know, ironed out some of the basics for it because I figured to do a budget build, we were looking at, you know, $5,000 to $20,000, which sounds kind of like a big window, but in the grand scheme of things for a diesel, $5,000 is good luck buying a running and driving truck for $5,000. That's, and then, of course,
yeah, that's
at
fair.
$20,000, you know, you're getting into the buying the truck, big injector, big air, built transmission. Like, you're up there spending a couple of dollars to be competitive. You know, you're not just showing up with a stock truck or a questionable truck. So I let the budget kind of dig. After talking with Tyler and Ron, we ended up deciding on $10,000 for a budget. Now, mind you, before that phone call had even happened, I had already gone through and spec'd myself out a Duramax, a transmission, and a body to swap it into for under $5,000. So I knew whatever our budget was, if we went over the $5,000 that we were talking about, it would just be more fuel to add to the fire.
Correct. Yeah, that's where your performance side of things comes in, where you can start hopping it up.
Bingo. Well, I mean, to an extent, like, a lot of it has to do more so with the air and fuel. The bottom end is going to stay the same regardless if I did a $5,000 build or a $20,000 build.
Well, yeah.
It's just what how do we do the injectors? How do we do the CP3s or whatever the deal is? Anywho, I needed to be able to talk with them, though, to make sure that we were all, you know, playing inside of that fair arena. You know, I didn't want to handicap one of those platforms by putting it at $10,000 or $5,000 where, you know, good luck buying a Cummins for that kind of money that's worth anything and being able to do something to it. And on the flip side, I didn't want to just have it where the Cummins would absolutely run away from everybody, because at $20,000 you can get yourself a common rail Cummins and, you know, do a good old 48 and you're home free. That is a fantastic race platform.
Correct. And then,
of course, once we figured out what our budgeting for it was, we settled on $10,000. $10,000, we believe, is a fair price to be able to purchase a vehicle, modify a vehicle, and make this challenge competitive. It's not going to be something lame that you're just going to show up with a stock truck, and it's not going to be something that's so unattainable that you're like, dude, you got $20,000 in a truck. Like, how is some guy that's going to work for 2 or 3 summers be able to make that happen? You can buy yourself your first vehicle, you know, at 16, after working a couple of summers before, buy your first vehicle, Honda Civic, whatever the deal is, run that for another 2 or 3 years, save up a couple more dollars, sell your Honda Civic, and then buy your diesel and start doing whatever we're doing. And you're 20 years old with one of these trucks now?
Yeah. So, I can see exactly where you're coming from on this and the direction you want to go with it.
So, after kind of nailing down what the budget was, the next thing was to try to figure out how are we going to rate these things. You know, I personally miss the old diesel power challenge. I think diesel power challenge was one of the best things ever, because it wasn't, hey, you know, we want you to do this. You had to be voted into diesel power challenge. It's not like ECC where whoever's got the biggest budget, the best shop, whatever the deal is. It was a viewer and voted only option to be able to get in and compete in that event. But more importantly, that event was not just, you know, throw it onto the dyno, see what it makes for horsepower, and then throw it onto the drag strip and then do a sled pull with it. No, those, when they did diesel power challenge, one of the things that they did was a fuel economy test. And then they had a drivability test for some of the years. I think they got rid of the drivability test later on throughout the challenge just because of the level of trucks that they were competing at.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at the stuff that they did with that, looking at what makes for a good truck. You know, if you bought your Civic, worked a couple more summers, and then sold your Civic, you know, you're going to want your diesel truck to be able to be daily driven. You know, you don't want this to be a 6.4 that's going to show up and, you know, it might let go on you today, it might let go on you tomorrow. You know, you're going to want to have that reliability. So in order to add that into our challenge that we've now got the budget set up for, we decided originally, I was going to say, that we've got to drive it from wherever, you know, we're starting out with to the event. However, we ended up deciding to run this alongside UCC, and with doing that, it wasn't going to be fair to make Tyler drive over 1,000 miles. I was going to drive 500 miles, and then Ron was going to drive about 100 miles. That just wouldn't really be fair for Tyler to try to compete in that same challenge.
No, so, well, it wouldn't even be fair for you.
Well, I mean, it was a great concept to be able to have the drivability side of it there, but in the long run, it just didn't make sense. So after talking with the guys, we're going to meet up, and then we're all going to start from the same spot, and we're going to drive to UCC. So it's over 100 miles, so we've got to do a minimum of 100 miles.
Okay.
How you drive throughout that is completely up to you. However, those 100 miles that we're going to do is also going to be part of the fuel economy test. You know, we're going to top all of our tanks off, and we're going to see how much fuel they burn from A to B. So if you are out there on this drive absolutely hot rodding your truck, yeah, you're going to burn a little bit more fuel. If you're out there, you know, locked up in fifth just cruising, you're going to burn a lot less fuel. If you've got big injectors and you're trying to run an oiling system to support it, your fuel economy is going to suffer. So
right.
We've got that added into it. And then, of course, we've got the dyno. You know, everybody has to have a horsepower number. You know, horsepower plus torque. We're not doing this stuff of where it's, you know, just horsepower, it's just torque. Horsepower plus torque to get you a combined number that places you wherever you're at, because the Cummins might make, you know, 500 foot-pounds of torque, but if it's only making 200 horsepower, it's going to balance out somewhere. Whereas if a Power Stroke shows up making 300 horsepower and 400 foot-pounds of torque, you're still in the same arena, even though they're two completely different power numbers.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So we've got that going on, and then we have got, what else is there? We're going to do the drag race. You know, you've got to have a quick truck. It's one thing to be able to get onto a dyno and put down 500, 700, 1,000 horsepower. It's another thing to be able to put that power to the ground. Can that transmission hold that power that you're making? Not in just one gear, but in all the gears.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and do ourselves a drag race. That'll give us a ET. Originally, we wanted to include the reaction time for it into the points for this, but I believe we decided to just do what the elapsed time of the platform is. That way, nobody gets kind of screwed out of this for the original purpose of, you know, presenting this to the fans. If I can't cut a light, that would do the Duramax platform a disservice, no matter what way you look at it. Same thing for the Cummins and the Power Stroke.
Right, yeah. So,
obviously, it'll be a personal thing between all three of us, but at the end of the day, we're going to cut it fair to everybody that's actually trying to watch this competition as it happens. And then, since Ron, Tyler, and myself are all Gleason Cars folks, we're going to do the burnout competition. We are going to put these things into the hardest platform, the hardest competition that you can possibly think of, and see who's going to walk away. You know, doing a two-minute-long burnout in a cheap truck just is, you're asking for a lot of issues.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, but that'll mostly round it all out. I don't think that we have decided anything past that. I would like to be able to see, you know, you get bonus points to be able to drive it back. You know, if you go out there and you scatter it on the dyno, if you scatter it on the burnout competition, whatever it is, you know, if you made it that far, you made it that far, but it would be good to be able to still, you know, have a usable truck at the end of this. But we haven't discussed that yet, so it's not been agreed to.
Right. And I get that. You know, any one of these for any reason could totally just wipe out on the drag strip or come apart.
Any part of it.
Yeah, any part of it, really.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is, like, you've got to factor in for, like, the human factor. You're going to drive this thing for 100 miles.
Yeah.
So there's a possibility that somebody runs into you. There's a possibility that anything can happen. But I feel like to be able to keep people from doing, like, bonsai passes, just buy the 6.4, put the 300-horse tune on it, and absolutely yeet that thing. If it makes it, it makes it. You know, we want this to be something that people can duplicate. If you have got, you know, more time than money and you want to convert that into a hot rod, a diesel, you know, this is the way that you're going to do it. Here's how we're going to do it, and this is how it's going to perform. I know right now we've got $10,000 to do this. We're talking about doing it, of course, this year, and then doing a follow-up and adding in another $5,000 or $10,000 on top of whatever our budget is, to be able to improve that platform from there for following episodes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And as you get older and your budget increases because you worked another summer and you worked another summer, you can see this platform continue to evolve.
Exactly. So if you take your 6.4 and absolutely scatter it, you know, maybe that's not the best platform to start with, but it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Oh, it'll be. Yeah. I'm,
oh yeah. I'm super, I'm invested.
Yeah, we're both super excited to see how exactly this runs its course and evolves as time may go on.
I'll tell y'all this much. I have got the motor that is going to be used for this challenge in the 67 right now, and it's what we're doing. What I'm doing a lot of the R&D to try to figure out what's going to be the best size injectors and a lot of the other stuff to go with it, as well as making content for the people that are going to see it. You know, the 67 has been parted out. We have got a completely redesigned truck from basically the ground up. And today was the first day I actually got to drive it, but it's going to give us the ability to get a good break in onto that, our budget motor, so that when we show up to this challenge, I already know what the motor is capable of.
Right.
You know, there's no sense in getting onto the dyno and winging it past what I know where its limits are. If I go ahead and scatter the motor right now, you know, I literally just picked up another set of LBZ rods for $60. So I'll take those $100 rods off of it and add in my $60 rods. Like, I'll just keep making that budget lower and lower as time goes on.
So, yeah, and that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, do you know where you're going with your side of things?
With which part?
With exactly how you want to build this thing.
For the cheap truck challenge?
Yeah.
The poor diesel challenge?
Yeah.
So...
Or are you gonna keep everything in your back pocket?
Yeah, you gotta keep it under wraps.
I don't know. I mean, the whole point behind this was... you know, like I said, people have been commenting on my TikTok posts and other stuff. Hey, I want to be able to build a budget Duramax. I want to be able to do this. I want to be able to do that. And I want to be able to keep releasing content for those people. But I also want to make sure that the other platforms are able to get a fair shot at this, you know, what we're doing. So as far as this stuff goes, all of it will be posted up onto TikTok, Instagram, whatever platform I feel like posting it to that day. And, you know, follow along. It's there to be able to show y'all how it all plays out. I'm not going to say that we might be working on the side for, you know, a specific tune for the dyno run, a specific tune for the drag race run, and then a specific tune for the burnout competition. But there's definitely going to be a lot of stuff just posted to the internet. You know, I'll tell you right now, the platform is a LV7 base. So LV7 block, LV7 crank, LBZ rods, LV7 pistons, LV7 heads. You know, when it comes to a cheap truck challenge, especially in the Duramax world, your LV7 is going to be the one that you're going to end up choosing. It's kind of like a double whammy, because not only is it the cheapest truck, you know, that you're going to be able to buy because it's an LV7, but it also gives you a really good base to start from.
Correct.
You've got the best crank that you can pick up for a Duramax. And then you've got the best pistons that you can pick up for a Duramax.
Yep.
The reality is, it's an LB7. It already needs injectors. You're going to be doing injectors. So, knowing all that stuff, it just made sense to do an LB7. You know, like I've already said, LBZ rods, you've got extra material between the wrist pin and the actual crank.
Yep.
So you picked up, you know, 10% more, you know, strength in that rod. And then, of course, a lot of it also plays into tuning. Horsepower doesn't break anything. Torque destroys stuff. You know, if you put a lot of cylinder pressure on top of that rod for a short period of time, or for a long period of time, to be able to make that big torque number, you're going to bend a rod. However, if you have an evenly applied pressure curve to that rod, at a higher RPM, it spends a lot less time under load, so you're able to get a lot more horsepower out of it, essentially. Horsepower is how quickly you can do work, and that plays into what your elapsed time is, plays into the dyno number, and it also plays into your burnout competition.
But that torque number, that's what really starts killing shit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, torque destroys stuff, and I don't think people understand that, because like, the LS guys, congratulations, you've got a 800 horsepower LS, but it only makes, you know, 600, 500 foot-pounds of torque. It's not making a big torque number. It turns a lot of RPM. It's able to work very quickly, but it can't do a lot of work. Diesels aren't intended for that. Diesels are intended to be able to do a crap ton of work, and it gets there whenever it gets there. It's the 7.3.
Oh, yeah. The 7.3 is a perfect example of that.
They are.
It's not going to do it right now,
but it's going to do it.
But it's going to fucking do it.
Oh, it's going to do it. So... But, no, we got our base figured out. I mean, you know, like I said, now I've got to play with, I'm doing some turbo stuff. I've got four or five different turbos that I'm going to play around with and see where the budget will land us for that. And then, of course, I've got to play with the injector sizing. You know, we want to figure out what the most efficient, like the budget-friendly option is for injectors, because they're common rail injectors. So
yeah,
I believe right now my cheapest option is going to start out at 60% overs, and then we've got an option to run like a 250% over injector on top of it. The problem is, once you get into those 250s, you're no longer looking at just the nozzle. You've got to do the entire injector body. So it gets a little bit more pricey, but you know, for the guy that's on a budget who's willing to spend some time and actually try to figure out how a lot of this stuff works, you could be looking up there at that kind of power.
Yeah, that's what I was about to mention, is that at a 250, you're really looking at body work on that injector, and you're going to have to start digging into them.
I think internal modification on LV7 injectors, at least in Rexxergy, starts at 2 or 250.
Does it start at 2 or 250?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know a lot of us started doing, me personally, we do a lot of body work starting at 100. 150, it really becomes required just to be able to maintain that flow rate.
I can't remember where the LV7s start from Rexxergy, but I know from Rexxergy, a Cummins injector starts at 300% with body modification.
Correct. I mean, that's something that you really should be talking with Rexxergy, because I know the sticks that I've got in it are not Rexxergy sticks.
Yeah.
So, you know, and at the end of the day, I hate to say this, as great as Rexxergy is, I don't believe that they're going to be within our budget to be able to make this happen. And that's another thing that kind of really sucks, too, is being able to work with companies like Rexxergy. It would be nothing for me to be able to message them and be like, hey, look, we're doing this Cheap Shark Challenge. Do you have a set of sticks that somebody returned, that somebody didn't need, or something else? And we'd be able to get a budget to do on something like that. But the reality is, we want this to be as duplicatable for, you know, anybody that's out there.
Yeah,
so if we were to
real
get
world,
those,
yeah.
Yep. If we were to get those sticks like that, we'd have to budget them in at whatever retail is.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's where your budget comes into play and takes a huge hit, because you just paid all this. You quote-unquote, in the real world, would have just paid all this money
for a set of sticks. Yeah.
And that, yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Exactly. I mean, like, the reality is, if you're going to do an LB7, I'm telling you right now, go ahead and put a set of Rexxergy injectors into it, because you're not going to have issues out of them.
Yep. Right.
If you're building a budget truck and you're going to have to do injectors, you're probably going to have to do a bottom end, you're going to have to work on this thing,
having to do injectors
every other weekend is probably not the biggest thing that you're going to have to worry about.
Right, yeah, right. Exactly.
So there's definitely a company for your applications.
Yes, and this is where we start unlocking and showing exactly
some diesel logics in that bitch.
But I'm not even, I won't be completely honest with you, I'm not even doing, like, diesel logic. I've got Ching Chong injector nozzles that we start out. We've got a 30% over, a 45% over, 60% over. And these injector nozzles are China specials. They're $120 for the 30% overs. They're $170 for the 45% overs. They're $200 for a 60% over LV7 injector nozzle. Obviously, we're going to have to get the shimming right between the coil and the nozzle, the pencil, and everything else. But, like, we're not doing something where this is going to be together for the next 10 years.
No,
we're
looking at
maybe a year out of it.
I know, and I'm with you. I'm so glad you told me that. I'm so much more excited now.
Well, and like I said, we're going to look at seeing if we can't do some micro extruding with an extrusion hone or whatever it is that we've got access to over here, and we'll see if we can't just do like a 500% over injector that absolutely hazes at idle, absolutely has no smoke control, but it'll make power.
Fuck it, use the drill bit.
Fuck it, use the drill bit.
Just go ahead and cut the tip off of it all the way together.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Run a garden hose to it, it'll be okay. Yeah, just take
it. It's like the Cummins guys. Oh yeah, it's a 5x1 or 16 or whatever it is. Yeah, this is a 1x110.
What? 1x110.
For fuck's sake.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Do you have a smoke control? Nope. Do you have fuel economy? Nope. Does it make power? Yes, sir.
Absolutely. All of it.
Drivability is a little bit hard, but it's fine. This is the kind of deal that you're going to learn the mistakes that you should make along the way. We'll see how this plays out.
Don't worry. We'll turn our heads when you have to stop 5 times over 100 miles for fuel. We'll turn our heads.
Yeah, we'll look the other way. I'll tow a trailer so you guys have some backup.
I mean, like, at the end of the day, that's like, how big of a deal is the fuel economy test if you win the dyno drag race in the burnout competition?
Well, like, you guys got to decide how much matters. Each segment is worth.
Yeah.
See, and that's one of the things that I've been working on, too, is trying to figure out, like, a point system as to how we're able to grade all of this, and it all plays out relative to the platforms, to the area that it is. You know, I feel like, you know, the dino numbers are cool. Dino definitely should count for something, but it doesn't really matter that much if you make 1,000 horsepower and 1,300 foot-pounds of torque on the dyno. You're still running a 10-second eighth-mile pass. Like,
right, yeah.
You can't put the power down.
Yeah, and I get where you're coming from, you know, and this is going to show sort of the way that UCC does it, who has the overall best average across these circumstances.
Exactly, and it also plays into how UCC will let us run this event, because I know if we have to go and do, obviously we've got to start out with our drive, our 100-mile drive to there. We're going to go ahead and do the fuel economy test while we're at it. Once we get to UCC, though, if we go ahead and do the burnout competition and we all make it through that, great. We do our drag race, great. I can tell you, we're going to throw everything that we've got at the dyno at that point. If it blows up, it blows up. Like, nobody really cares because you don't have to make any more events. Now, if we do our drive there, our fuel economy test there, and then we have to jump right onto the dyno, that's going to play out in our strategy, because now we're no longer going to be like, all right, just throw the moon tune into it.
You're going to be a little more conservative.
Still got two more events.
Yeah, yeah. All of a sudden, Ron can't just turn the fuel screw all the way out.
That's the platform that I think I'm worried the most about, is because I'm not really worried about the power stroke. I get it. Charlie Keeter won twice in a row. I have seen Rudy's do some insane things.
Yeah, Rudy's
the power stroke platform, at the budget we are at, there's no way it's going to be competitive. Tyler, I love you. It's not going to happen.
No, power strokes are pricey animals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's the only thing that would really scare me from Tyler's perspective is if he manages to find himself a 6.7 off of Copart, and then I might be worried.
Oh my god, I almost choked on my beer because that was so funny. If he manages to find a 6.7 off a Copart.
Are you shitting me?
I mean, this thing has been like rolled and everything else, and he's like, but it's tuned and deleted. Yeah, that's the same.
Yeah, he's gonna chop the lid off of it and drive it there.
Exactly. That is the only way I would be worried about a six.
Cost me $4,500 bucks.
We've also added in a show and shine portion to this because they've got the UCC show and shine, so we'll be part of that as well.
Are you guys going to factor the show and shine part of this into the competition?
You are damn right we are.
You have to.
If that kid's been working all summer, doesn't care about how his truck looks, you're wrong.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair, that's fair. My next question, and I think I know the answer to it, do you get points added to your score at the end of this if you are, say, the lowest one on the budget?
See, we were talking about that, and I don't feel like you should exactly get points if you are the lowest one on the budget, because the reality is if you show up to this event and you smoke an axle on the dyno, and you're able to go and buy another axle that night, swap it in so that you can get the drag race tomorrow, if you still have that wiggle room in your budget to make that happen, you're still within budget. But if you're already at your $10,000 and you now need that axle, well, you're going over budget. There's points deducted if you go over budget, but if you're under budget, it doesn't really count for you. It just means that you didn't spend the money that you earned.
Okay. That's fair. I get that. That's fair. I understand that.
But you also have to play it safe, though, because like I said, if you show up at $10,000 and now you need to go do an oil change because your LV7 injector or turn line failed, how are you going to budget the oil?
And quartz from AutoZone with the cheapest frame filter you can buy.
That's no shit.
So, no, I feel like we've got a pretty good handle on the whole. It's going to be budgeted. It's going to be attainable, and that's one of our biggest things, is that it's attainable. You know, it's not UCC where it's these shops that have an infinite amount of budget to throw at it. It's where this is the average guy, and they're just trying to make it happen. My biggest thing is I wanted to make sure that the platform was done justice.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's awesome. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So. You're giving each platform a fair fighting chance.
And working with individuals that actually love that platform.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You're picking people who aren't going to cheat and who aren't going to try to fuck you over or bend the rules or whatever.
Yeah, this isn't fucking...
I feel like,
This isn't fucking Gas Monkey Garage versus Roadkill. I don't.
And if Ron cheats, you tell us. We'll go break his kneecaps.
I'm hoping. That is, I don't know. I'm not really that worried about Ron because at $10,000, he really can't get into a common rail. So
yeah, not quite.
It pushes him. You want to say that?
I said not. Yeah, you can't. You just can't quite get into a common rail for that price.
I mean, you can get into a common rail, but like you're still gonna have to take care of the transmission, make it competitive.
Yeah,
you're gonna
exactly.
have to take care of the tuning for it, and then of course you're still gonna have to do a CP3 injectors, a turbo, and all the other crap. It's
yeah, it wouldn't be hardly feasible.
Yeah.
So I'm not really. I would be concerned if he showed up with a common rail, but at the end of the day, I doubt that's within his budget. If he does, you can guarantee that I'm going to be going over every single lock washer he put on that thing. I'm going to make sure it's in the budget somewhere. Because that thing is going to rattle loose.
Show me my $10,000!
But that being said, a common rail's out of his arena, I believe, which means he's going to do a P-pump 24 valve, because that is within his arena, and this is where we get into it. The P-pump 24 valve can probably make as much, if not more, horsepower than what the Duramax will on the dyno. I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
You know, I guarantee that Ron will put down the biggest torque number of all of us. Horsepower is out to be debated, but he's going to own the torque number. Not worried about that.
Yeah.
The challenge becomes, since he's going to have a P-pump 24 valve, you know, driving it from where we're meeting to the event, not that big of a deal. The fuel economy of it, though, his timing is already set. You know, he doesn't have any control over the timing. He's got no control over his fueling, so I imagine his fuel economy is going to be so poor.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't
change it on the fly.
Yeah,
he can change it, but not on the fly.
Well, yeah, but not on the fly. Not without taking it apart and putting it back together.
He can't change it on the fly. He doesn't have an ECM that's watching it, but his injection control pressure is significantly lower than what a common rail is, which means that the common rail is going to have the best burn. It's going to be the most efficient system there. Same thing for the Huey injection. You're not having that injection pressure that's the same as what the common rail is. So the common rail should have the best fuel economy out of the bunch if he stays with a P-pump 24 valve. Now, doing a drag race, I will probably see that he is going to lack a lot of power down low in the usable band with a P-pump 24 valve because there's no adjustment to it. You put your foot down, and the fuel that you command is the fuel that you get.
Yeah, it's there, and it's right now.
I've got that timing sweep already set up for it. I've got my rail pressure coming in where it's supposed to and going through and being able to do all this testing now for the turbo design that we're going to run for this competition and everything else. My tune is going to be spot on.
Yeah, you can from a dig come up on it and be on top of it quicker than what Ron is going to be able to be on top of it from a dig off of a set point.
So, I feel like that's going to play a lot into it. I am a little bit worried at the show and shine just because Cummins Tards are going to love a P-pump 24 valve. Not going to lie. They're going to see that and be like, that's hot.
That is true.
So, might have a little bit of competition there. I feel like a Duramax swap, though, with something ignorant is going to be the solution to beat them.
This is true. And it all just kind of depends on how you do it up pretty and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, but it all comes down to budget. Like, can you budget those 20 by 12s?
Yeah, exactly.
Blow your budget on forces.
Yeah, I wanted some 300% over injectors, but I got some 2616.
just so I can win the show and shine portion of this.
Where are your tires for those? Oh, I couldn't afford those. Those were out of budget. Yeah.
It's just on the rims.
Yep. So, that'll be something I'm excited for. I'm still trying to figure out transmission and axle and everything else, but we're going to make sure that we show up with a dialed motor that we already know what it's going to do long before we show up. And you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. I didn't really build this platform so much to compete in this, but more so for them to be able to show what their platform is capable of.
Sure.
I think at this point, my only other question is, when you guys are racing, are you planning on racing in 4x4 or two-wheel drive?
I believe all of us have two-wheel drive trucks because this is a budget special. We don't have the money to go out and buy a four-wheel drive diesel truck. So
right, okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's if I'm pretty sure Ron's already bought his truck for it. Tyler already bought his truck for it. I've bought my motor and an Allison. I don't know if I'm going to use the Allison yet, but I've got a motor. The reality is buying a two-wheel drive truck will save you $1,500, $3,000, give or take, whatever platform you're choosing.
Yeah, true.
So to be able to save those and be able to spend that money, I mean, like, you know, you're going to save $1,500, $3,000 on your initial purchase of the truck, but then you can spend that $250, $300 for a used set of slicks off the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Also true.
Also true.
Also true.
So, and especially in my application where I've got, you know, the access to a laptop to be able to change what my timing curve looks like, what my rail pressure looks like, what my boost curve looks like, I can basically already have, like, a traction control system built into it. So if it starts spinning the tire from whatever the front tire sees, it'll start pulling out a little bit of boost, a little bit of timing, whatever the deal is. Ron and Tyler, Tyler might be able to do that. If Ron's got a P-Pump 24 valve, he's got his right foot.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's got his right foot and a pedal, and that's it.
So, he will definitely be driving the manliest platform out there, but is manliness worth an L?
Is manliness worth losing? Well, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. That's
awesome. Well, definitely, it's something we're definitely interested in, and we're going to keep a close eye on from the outside.
Yeah, definitely need to make some more content on that. Now that the 67 is kind of running and driving, look forward to seeing a lot more testing on that motor and how we're going to start making it, you know, competitive.
Well, and who knows?
We'll keep a lookout.
Well, we might be checking in with you guys. I preemptively here, we are going to have Ron on the podcast. Yep. I need to check in with Tyler, and I would like to interview him as well on his insights and this, that, and the other. But we are going to kind of follow this as time progresses and stuff like that. And I would actually like to interview you guys as UCC progresses and interview you guys as the diesel poor diesel challenge progresses through the event.
Yeah. We've definitely already kind of got our own plan about this whole shenanigan as it plays out.
Yep. And then of course, you know, when we get a week out, you know, whatever the deal is, you can get all three of us on here and really let the talking begin.
Oh shit.
Like when they put the UFC fighters in the same room and they start talking shit.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so fucking awesome.
Yes, the Cummins is a great platform. How's that 47 doing again?
Yeah.
That gal's doing great.
You guys can just go back and forth and back and forth. Oh, well, fucking Tyler's not even going to be able to show up because he has a standpipe leak.
I'm genuinely curious to see what Tyler does because, like I said, I don't know the Powerstroke platform. Powerstroke's great work trucks. I've never seen anything in a performance application. He knows the stuff forwards and backwards. What he chooses to bring to the table is going to be interesting. Whether it's a 6 liter, a 6.4, or a 6.7, I don't see a 6 or a 7.3 out of him, but definitely curious to see what platform shows up.
Oh, it's going to be so
good.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait for this to continue. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be a riot, and I think the best thing is everybody wins regardless as to what, you know, actually happens at the event, because now you have the knowledge that's getting out there to these people, you know, whether you're a Ford guy or a Duramax guy, you know, there's people that are going to be able to show you, hey, here's what we're doing, here's how we're going to be competitive with it, mm-hmm. and then you're going to see if that's enough or not enough at the event.
Yeah, exactly. And it might sway people one way or the other, this, that, and so on, and go forth, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And you get to prove it, and you're like, this is what works. And younger guys and stuff like that are getting into this are like, okay, this is what works, and I know this, that, or the other. I can continue. This is the path I want to go down.
Oh, and especially, too, running it with UCC. I mean, like, UCC is the pinnacle for diesel performance. Like, you're just throwing thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars at these trucks to make it happen. And to be able to go alongside and run a poor diesel challenge with it really brings the event back down to earth and is able to give something that these people can see that's attainable.
Yes, that makes me...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it gives me a good warm and fuzzy feeling inside.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but... Nope, y'all follow along with that, and we'll see what happens as time progresses.
Sweet.
Sounds like a plan.
Fuck yeah. Well, I think we're going to let you go, and we'll go ahead and cap this out and let you get back to working.
Yes, sir. Y'all be good. I'll talk to you later.
You too, buddy. We'll see ya.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Built C-Max. That was...
Again.
Finally getting him back on again to go ahead and finish out his last interview. And you guys get to hear about the Poor Diesel Challenge, which Dakota and I, if we haven't already made it clear, are super excited about.
Oh, yeah, we're all about it.
Yeah, this is like great way to bring something, like you said, it's a great way to bring something like UCC down to earth, and how can...
Yeah, oh, yeah, it makes it feel way more obtainable for...
Yeah.
People and it, that are...
Just...
Every year when I go to UCC, I'm like, man, I would love to have something like this.
I know. But, guys like us.
I think seeing some shitbox trucks that have a $10,000 budget will kind of make me get excited about stuff. Not that I'm not excited about stuff.
Again,
I think it'll kind of help light the fire under my ass.
Oh, yeah. I'm just really excited to watch.
I am, too. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be so cool. Tyler, Ron, and Built C-Max all fucking just pulling down the fucking drag strip, showing exactly how they can make it happen with that budget and stuff like that.
I would even venture to say that outside of the three people that are doing this, this may be the top place to get all the news on it.
It could be. Because we're going to be following this.
From now all the way up until the event, we're going to follow them at the event.
Yep.
We're going to get tons of content out on this.
Oh, this is going to be so... I literally cannot fucking wait for this.
I know,
this.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be so good. So good. Oh, Dakota's dying. Dakota's dying.
Again.
What's your... Tell the podcast what your sugar's at.
No!
Tell them what's at.
Eat my ass.
Tell them what's at.
222.
Oh, it's 222?
222.
Is it dropping or rising?
It's steady.
Yeah. Yeah? That's why it's going off, is because it's steady?
Well, it just went up like 2 or 3 points. Oh. It went over the threshold.
Oh, what's your threshold?
220.
Is it 220?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what your threshold is, so fucking beats the fuck out of me. Regardless, that was Built C-Max. Thank you yet again for tuning into another episode of Wrench Jockey Radio. Dakota, where can they find you?
You find me on Instagram at dhickok, H-A-C-K-O-K _5.9. That's where I've been the most active recently.
Yes. Yes, true.
You can find me on the TikTok at Hickok Diesel.
And you can find me at WildGoose_repair on TikTok and Instagram as well. I don't have any other platforms at the moment. I can hardly keep up with two of them.
Right.
Because I'm so fucking busy. If I was full-time, I'd probably do more. But it is what it is. Regardless, thank you for tuning in yet again. We will talk to you next time.
Bye-bye!